You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Paranormal Portal Podcast. I'm your host, Brent Thomas, and hope you guys are doing great, and thank you so much for being a part of our shows. If you have an event, a paranormal event of your own, or an experience that you'd like to share, please let me know. You can either be a guest on the show, or I can read your account, but you can let me know by emailing me at paranormalportalradio@gmail.com. So make sure you get the radio in there, because if you just send it to paranormalportal@gmail.com, it'll go to somebody else. So, but welcome everybody, and I got a great show lined up for you guys. This is a really cool opportunity that we had to get in touch with a couple of wonderful gentlemen from across the pond, Mr. Chris Dawson and Jim Bradley from the Irish Bigfoot Research Organization. I had an opportunity to sit down with them and having a discussion about the research and the documentary that they've been working on and what's going on over across the pond. So sit back, buckle up, and enjoy the ride. But it's a wonderful show, and I hope you enjoy it. Everybody, welcome to the show. We got a great show lined up for you today. A couple of gentlemen from across the pond from us here in the U.S. And I'd like to introduce you guys to Chris Dawson and Jim Bradley of the Irish Bigfoot Research Organization. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Brent, how are you?
Hi, Brent. Great to be here.
I'm just so thrilled it worked out. And for those of our listeners out there, we tried to coordinate one other time and and everything just went sideways for me. So I really appreciate your guys' patience and working with me to get this rescheduled. I'm just thrilled to be able to do this today. So thank you guys again for working this out with me.
Not a problem. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. So the Irish Bigfoot Research Organization. Now, that's outstanding. I didn't know you guys had some active, really active research groups up there in Ireland, but I got to ask you both and whoever can go first that wants to, but how did this journey start for you guys?
Well, my journey started, Brent, at a very, very young age. I'm actually coming 45 next month. That's not to spill too many beans, but my journey started with Bigfoot when I was about 4 years old.
Okay.
My dad was all into those movies back in the 70s, and I can vaguely remember him putting The Legend of Balky Creek on. Uh-huh. And of course, it terrified me, and I had nightmares for a few years after that. But anyway, that sort of rolled into an interest. And back in the 80s and stuff, there was no internet, of course, but we had plenty of books, and I delved into every possible book on the market. Mm-hmm. And got my interest going from there. But it's only recently, really in the past few years, where it has came to prominence in Ireland. And of course, the organisation itself is only just about a year and a half old. Of course, I was researching before that, but it's just from a few reports that I've seen coming up in Ireland itself that, you know, twigged me to say, right, well, I'm going to have to go out and see what's going on.
Yeah, myself, Brent, being about 10 years interested, it was initially Finding Bigfoot, the TV show, which came on TV over here, and it made me tweak my ears up and listen and have a look, and I got very interested in it, and started armchair researching on the internet and stuff like that, and from there it led to I just typed in Bigfoot in Ireland, and I was amazed, absolutely amazed, to find out historical sightings going way, way, way back. So then myself and Chris met up over the internet as such, and things started to come together, and we proceeded to set up the group and the organization.
Well, that's fantastic, and you know, I can appreciate what you're saying, and I know that there's a lot of people that are like super critical of the show Finding Bigfoot, but you know, and I understand that it's probably not a really good representation of actual research efforts that are going on, but the one thing that I think is really powerful that show did was it created a dialogue for people. It created the ability to have the dialogue. And I think that once it became okay, all of a sudden all these people had experiences that were finally felt comfortable to come out and discuss it. Is that what you found too in reference to Finding Bigfoot?
Yeah, exactly. It made people aware. You know, if it did anything for the subject, it made people aware. And the show, of course, it's very difficult if you're doing a show. And I understand there could be probably 20-odd people in the forest where they're working, and the chances of coming across something are very slim with that many people there. But I do understand where the show was coming from. But, yeah, I really enjoyed the show. Basically, it brought the subject, you know, to the fore as such. So that's where I'm coming from with it.
Right. No, I agree. I think that's very true. Now, I'm not super familiar with Ireland as far as geographically speaking, but how much forest land and wilderness is there in Ireland?
10% of Ireland, roughly, is forested. And the majority of that, Brent, is in the north, and of course that's where the majority of the sightings occur.
Mm-hmm.
Strangely enough, there is a couple of big areas further south, but as I say, the north seems to hold the most sightings, the most occurrences. And of course, one reason for our organization forming was to get more witnesses forward, because people here, Brent, I'm not sure what people's like in the States. I know there's a bit of a difference in the communities, but
mm-hmm.
people here are very, very reserved about speaking out about something strange that's happened to them, you know?
Okay.
And I think it's just a wee bit of encouragement that people need. And just like you said with Finding Bigfoot, it did do that with a lot of people over the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think it did have a bit of an impact here too. But of course, in different communities, different parts of Ireland, people are very different. You know, maybe sure. in certain parts they'll come, maybe speak out quicker than others would. But it's the ones who don't want to speak out who we want to target. We want to say, right, it's okay. Listen, somebody else has seen this. So you can tell us too. You know, that's really the whole objective. Of course, confidentiality is very important with that. But that's the main objective of the organization, is to make people feel... Well, feel as terrified to come forward as maybe they would be, you know.
Right, right. I gotta ask, how much pushback do you get from the communities in Ireland about having a Bigfoot group there? Are there a lot of people opposed to the idea and hard on you guys, or are people generally just accepting of the fact that this is what you guys are doing?
People at the moment, unfortunately, aren't really aware that there actually is an organization there.
Okay.
And one of the reasons for that. Probably it's because we're just new. But there is last year we did think of a few things. What could we do here to get the word out? I mean, you can share things on Facebook till you're more or less blue in the face, if you wish. So I guess sometimes it gets the right people, sometimes it does not. So we went through all different ideas, you know, and then of course we decided to make a documentary on it to get it out there everywhere as possible, and hopefully that's going to let people see that, you know, okay, this guy or this girl has seen this. I can speak about this, you know. So that's the method that we're using now at the moment to get the word out.
But now, as the word has been going out, are you noticing that people are really accepting of the idea, that the ones that are coming forward? Is there a sense of, oh, thank God you guys are here because I've experienced something? I mean, has it served as a?
Oh, yeah. Okay. It definitely has. We've only had a couple of reports in ourselves now from when we've started, but most of them have went to the bigger UK groups and stuff like that. But it definitely has had a little bit of an impact, and hopefully if the word gets out even further, then, as I say, then it will maybe have a bigger impact. But certainly the fact people accepted that Bigfoot is in Ireland, I had difficulty accepting that myself, to be honest.
Sure.
And as I say, it's only as being out in the field research is the only way that you can confirm it for yourself, and I certainly have had that confirmed on a few occasions. So,
yeah, that's fantastic. Now, are you guys familiar with the idea that perhaps these beings migrate, or at least have somewhat of a migration route? Does that become apparent in any of your research, or are they generally pretty confined in Ireland?
We sort of come across it's sort of seasonal. They're spotted seasonally as such at certain times of the year, more so than the other.
Right.
So moving around, we're not too sure, unless Chris might know more on that, but it's definitely seasonal. They seem to be seen at a certain time of year, more so than previous times.
Anything that I've seen in my two main research areas that would suggest that they do pretty much stay put here. That is probably because Ireland is a lot smaller than North America, obviously.
Yeah.
It's only about 300 or 400 miles in length, you know. So that would probably have an impact. And because of Ireland being so densely populated, now Ireland doesn't have a big population.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the way the population is laid out, they may feel more difficult about moving from place to place, you know.
Sure.
And that may have an impact, but there has been a few cases now over the past couple of years, especially, where I have noticed maybe that a different type of Bigfoot is in a certain area where it wasn't before. So,
oh, okay.
whether that, because we actually think that we have two different species here, Brent. We believe that if people are familiar with the Woodwoose, the Woodabaza, is the European and Russian Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
It's also known as the Almasty. And it's believed to be, people have reported being the cross between a chimpanzee and a Neanderthal sort of looking face.
Sure.
And then, of course, we have the other reports of the Big Grey Man, which is basically the Irish Bigfoot, the Sasquatch type. And those are the two types that we think that we have. Going by reports and research, etc. And as I said, my local area, which I would do more often than not, would be what we believe to be a Woodwoosh territory. And there has been a couple of occasions where the bigger guys have came in. The Woodwoosh generally reported to be sort of 7 feet tall,
mm-hmm.
where these guys, as you know yourself in the States, are 9 to 10 foot tall.
Yeah.
And of course, Jim was one of the people that actually added to that evidence.
Yeah, it was during filming for the documentary early February. Yeah, we were coming down this trail in the bog. We were surrounded by peatlands all around and heavy bog, very deep water. And Chris was filming for the documentary on the right hand side of me, looking towards the right, and I happened to glance towards the left, And to my left-hand side, about 100 to 150 yards away, there's a bit of an island sort of in the bog itself, and it's heavily, densely populated with local trees, silver birch and the like. And just out of the corner of my eye, I got this grey flash going from left towards the right. It only was, very fast, and it was over in an instant. But I could clearly see from the flash of the size, and I looked over immediately. It was about 8 to 10 foot tall, very wide, grey in colour, and extremely fast going from left to right. What it was, I can't say, but it was in the bog and very big, very tall, very wide.
Out of the region to be a woodpecker, anyway.
It was
going by reports.
Yeah, in the region of the reports, size and width-wise, it was
the grey man.
Yeah, the grey man. Yeah.
Wow.
So that was my first. That was my introduction into into the Bigfoot world, as you say.
Now, have you both experienced sightings? Have you both had encounters of your own? That I know is one of yours, but yeah, I'd love to hear about those.
Yeah. I've had quite a few, Brent, to be honest. Some of those ones at the side of the eye where you don't really, you don't know whether you see nothing or not. But and that same area where Jim was speaking of, it's only about middle of August, I think, and I had headed wearing a trail towards the railroad. And I stopped off. It was starting to get towards dusk, and I had my big torch with me, and I clicked it on, and I says, those batteries don't look too good, and maybe change these batteries, and took them out, and I just set a battery on a tree trunk just for a second, just until I got some more out of my pocket, and I heard an almighty groan, really deep groan, and I says, right, okay, and I was trying to figure out in my head what this could be. Could it be a wild animal? Could it be a big cat, or what could it be? Because there has been big cat reports in the area. And then I thought to myself, that doesn't sound like a cat, And then I thought, could it be a hog? Because there has been also reports of wild hogs as well. I says, no, it doesn't sound like a pig. So all those thoughts were all running through my head. I lifted the battery back off the tree, and then it started to grow again, and it went on for about a minute. It just kept growing and growing and growing, and I says, my goodness. So whatever it wasn't too happy. As I said, even though the thought went through my head, my main concern was, I hope it's not a big cat, because if it's a big cat, I'm done. I'm a goner, because there's nowhere to hide. The trees in there are all sort of 10 to 15 feet in height maximum. It's all water willow. It's all lowland bog. Very like parts of Texas.
Okay.
It's all very lowland bog on swampland with trees, So I says, I'm going to have to get out of here. So I headed out the trail, headed up alongside the railroad. I came up just about level with the second trail, heading back the opposite direction, and just as I sort of tailed around that, the bushes on the edge of that trail, I just seen at the bottom, maybe at the bottom of the trail, but a good bit down the trail anyway, at least 100 metres, I seen the same with Jim, seen, they seen the big grey man just sort of straight across the trail.
Wow.
So he obviously was tailing me. He wasn't happy about me having a battery change, obviously. I don't know what it was, but as I say, he tailed me, and I headed on along the railroad. I didn't see nothing else after this, but you just knew it. Just in that sixth sense that people have, I think, too, is that there was still something following me, and I felt that presence that until I got into the car and drove off,
Wow. And that is really powerful. That comes up all the time in the paranormal. It's just this sense that we have, and that's perfect the way you phrase that, the sixth sense. It's like, and I don't know if it comes from like a time when we were on the menu and like had to, develop this extra sense to survive, because I mean, naturally speaking, we are not fast. We are not strong. We are not agile, lithe, and we're, you know, maybe our ancestors were more at home navigating in the wilds. But I think, if it wasn't for that sense of knowing when we're being watched, we probably wouldn't have made it, you know?
Probably not. I think it's just a natural sense that every creature on Earth has, Brent. It certainly does work to your advantage, because I think, you know, if you didn't have it, you know, and if you did hang around in that situation, you know, would have come back and say, okay, you're not leaving my territory whenever I want you to leave, so I'm going to have to do something to you, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
You know?
Now, do they have a lot of the same behaviors over there as are documented over here and abroad, as far as throwing things like rocks and small objects? Okay. So those are.
Chris had an encounter there where there was a log thrown at him.
A railroad sleeper.
Yeah, it was the size of a railroad sleeper. So wow. Chris wants to tell you that one. It's very intense.
Well,
it was the same situation where it was being tailed on a couple of years ago now, and it just got out. It was only about literally a stone's throw from my car, and I just felt this whiz going past my ear. I heard sort of heard the wind moving first of all.
Mm-hmm.
If you can imagine that, and then I heard the whiz, and this railroad sized sleeper log just landed right beside my feet.
Oh man, that definitely rules out squirrels and stuff.
but their traits and stuff. That's actually one of the arguments that we would use, Brent, because the guys in North America and Russia and other parts of the world, they would say Bigfoots make certain things out of tree structures or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's no proof that they do.
Right.
At the same time, there's no proof that they don't.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, of course, the prints. There's countless amount of prints being found. And those are the arguments that we would use, you know, because some of the guys would say, well, how can there possibly be Bigfoots in Ireland?
Right.
You know, I would say, well, listen, these are the same structures that we're finding that you have found, that you have on your Facebook page or your website. Mm-hmm. And here's the same prints that you're finding too. So are these hoax or yours is hoax? Are they all hoaxes or right. Are they all real?
Right. No, that's a great point. Now, and I guess I neglected to ask you that, but how much pushback are you getting from the global community? Are you getting a lot of flack for the idea that there are Bigfoot in Ireland?
No, it's only really the odd guy would pop up, to be honest, Brent. And we have really got a lot of support.
Good.
Even a lot of support from the world's top researchers who have been in touch with us over time, you know. And the support has been almighty, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's great, you know, because you get so much arrogance in the Bigfoot community and you know, there's so many quote unquote experts out there that will just tell you all day long what they do and what they don't do, where they are, where they aren't. And I kind of share my opinion that Wes Germer has, you know, and Wes says, look, you then show me the one that's in your garage that you're studying, you know,
because exactly.
we just don't know. We have no idea what they do, what they don't do for sure, but we have a lot of little bits and pieces of evidence. And I don't think anybody has the claim that they got this all sorted.
There is another thing, Brent, that we have here in our favor. In the US, you got bears, wolves, and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Ireland, we don't have anything like that. We've no bears, we've no wolves. So the argument about, that's a bear track or a bear stepping in its own track again, making it look like an extended foot track or footprint, is we don't have bears. So that rules out that one.
Well, that's good. I was going to ask you about the natural fauna in Ireland, as I'm not really familiar with it. I suppose you have deer. You've mentioned feral hogs and the potential for big cat being there. But what else do you guys have?
Deer is probably the
deer. The largest, I'd say foxes would be the largest predator we have here. We don't have, we've no bears, we've no wolves. Feral pigs were introduced, people reintroduced them here again. They were wiped out many, many hundreds of years ago, but They were reintroduced here in certain pockets of area. And of course, like anything else that's reintroduced, they do breed and, you know, what disperse themselves around the country. So that's about it, really.
Well, you know, that's curious. And as a side note, that I think that would concern me if there was an effort to reintroduce wild hogs, because I know that, well, what it would seem to me is that the ecosystem over there has come into its own balance with the absence of them. So I wonder how far out of whack it's going to get with the reintroduction of them, because I know there, you can expect probably these huge population explosions because there are no natural predators to them other than the potential for there being a Sasquatch over there and perhaps a big cat. But is it just to reintroduce hunting over there, or what would be the motivation?
It is. It's purely hunting. Yes. Certain clubs and groups have introduced and reintroduced them. Oh. And that's exactly, you're 100% right on that, yeah.
It's all for game.
Yeah, it's all for game hunting, yeah.
But you know what you might find as a result, though, too, is a potential population increase in the Bigfoot that are there, because that's a huge food for them over here. I mean, there's been hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of sightings of people seeing them, you know, grabbing or taking down wild hogs, slamming them into tree trunks, and then carrying them away. So, and farmers also losing pigs is a real common thing that comes up. So I'm sure they'll be happy they're back.
Yeah. The problem that we have on both sides of the pond, Brent, if you take one report, I mean, other organizations in the States and across the world have all came to really the same conclusion. If you take one report of a Bigfoot, or a Bigfoot similar cryptid or whatever, it's estimated that there's 100 that have went unreported.
Yeah, right.
You know, so that's across the world. And if we take that into the equation in Ireland, well then, there's a lot of Bigfoots here too, you know?
Right, yeah, exactly. And I don't mean to imply that there aren't many, but I think that the more of those food groups that are introduced and are viable for the propagation of the species, I think is definitely going to encourage more, maybe more aggressive childbirth in that community.
Exactly.
In relation to the large cats and wild cats that we have here, they're not natural to this country or the UK. They were basically in the 70s, people with plenty of money had them as pets. And they brought in this new government in England and Northern Ireland brought in a new laws stating you have to have certain requirements and this and licenses and stuff. It turned out to be very, very expensive. And a lot of people just let the cats in, let them out into the mountains. And
My dad, Brent, he actually works for the Department of the Environment, which looks after birds of prey and stuff here in the north of Ireland.
Okay.
And he actually knows three people personally who done that in the 70s.
Oh, man.
So he had black panthers, black leopards, you name it, he had it, and he let all of them off.
Oh, my God.
It's amazing. They're definitely there, you know. But back to Bigfoot, of course. My belief in Bigfoot in Ireland, I can see where people's coming from when they say, okay, Bigfoot in Ireland. I was exactly the same as that up until February, roughly, this year. And even though I had a couple of little instances and stuff, little bits of encounters or things I heard or things that I seen at the side of my eye or things that whizzed past me or whatever the case was, it didn't actually hit me until this February just passed, where I was able to say, right, well, I'm 99% sure now that there is something here. Mm-hmm. And that was actually during filming the documentary Walking with the Wild Man that we're producing for the organization. I'm not going to tell you exactly what happened on this occasion, because it would spoil for people who want to see the documentary.
Sure.
But on this certain occasion, we found something on the mountaintop.
Wow.
And I don't want to spoil it, so that's all I'll say. Sure. But watch the documentary to see that part. That's the part that made me 99% sure. And then just back in April, I was out by myself doing a few drone shots. I had a drone out with me.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things, Brent, where people would suggest that they seem to attract a Bigfoot in, or a Bigfoot for that matter, in. is things like fireworks, music, kids having fun around a fire, drones, etc. The drone, I'm not sure whether it's the noise does it or whether it's the lights flashing on the drone that does it. Maybe they think it's a big wasp or a big bee, who knows?
Uh-huh.
But it certainly did get their attention one day in April. And I went around this area, an area just below Lough Neagh. If anybody doesn't know Ireland, Lough Neagh is the big lake right in the middle of the north of Ireland. And I was just down below that. And I had the drone out going around the woods, as you do, and set it up for a while, flew it over the woods, brought it back, changed the battery, and continued to do this throughout the day. Eventually, I made a route around about 2.5 miles round route, and I said, I'll take a little break. I sat down for a while, I had a cigarette, and I just happened to look over to my left, and I seen what I thought was two heads popping up and down behind a hedge, roughly about 300 metres away.
Wow.
And just looked to the right, beside that bush, and I seen your typical Bigfoot standing right out, same distance away, 300 metres, and he was actually standing in the pose with the arms looking out as if he was peeking out to see what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And even at this point, you know, I'm almost a skeptic, Brent, and I says, okay, I'm seeing things, you know, it's a bush, you know, and these two heads popping up and down is just the wind blowing a bush.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realised there was no wind.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, right, okay, I'll move on. So I moved on, headed up the trail, got about a further 300 metres away, and I just happened to glance back and looked up a tree, and there was a black mass up the tree. Now, as Jim said, there's no birds except for here. There is a chance that we have big cats, of course. It may have been that, who knows. But it certainly was a black mass up on a tree, which I thought really strange after seeing what I'd seen. And I took from this that they were following and watching what was going on.
Yeah.
I put the drone up again, flew it around again anyway, regardless of what I'd seen. And this thing up on the tree didn't move. I actually sent the drone over to that. It did sort of capture it a little bit, but because of the distortion in the picture and stuff, it's just one of your usual Bigfoot photographs, mm-hmm. where it's blurred. But anyway, I took the drone down and I headed around and I came into this little close trail where the trees were really, really close together. And I was walking along and I just happened to glance to my left, literally 10 feet from me, there was a conical head, black conical head, about 10 foot off the ground. I just went, seen it going down behind the hedge. Didn't see anything else, just seen the head going down behind the hedge.
Wow.
So whatever it was completely stealth. It had followed me the whole way. It was completely silent, and all I seen was the head, and that was it. If I wouldn't have turned at the right time, I would never have seen anything, obviously. But obviously, it had full intentions of following me right to the car or whatever the case was.
All right, everybody. Well, this looks like a good place for a break. So we are going to take a quick break, pay some bills, and we'll be right back with more of the Paranormal Portal podcast. Don't go away. Hey guys, Brent Thomas here of the Paranormal Portal Podcast. We just wanted to take a moment to introduce you to the Paranormal Portal store. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, leggings, stickers, mugs, you name it, you might find it over there. So head on over to teespring.com/stores/paranormal-portal and you too can help fund the Paranormal Portal Podcast. Thank you so much for all that you do and thank you for being a part of our Paranormal Portal family. Everybody, and we're back, and it's an epic discussion, so Let's get back to it.
Yeah, Brent, there's another highly documented story here from a place called Ballybooley Forest in County Antrim. It's been reported to, I think it was one of the UK research organizations, but it happened over here. It's basically from the 1990s. Mm-hmm. There was a woman walking her dogs with her husband in Ballybooley Forest, and they came to this clearing that was a big area of dead or cut down trees as such. It was a big area, in the middle, and the dogs were going a bit crazy. So the woman said to her husband, "There's somebody watching us or something from behind one of the trees, one of the logs on the ground down low, you know." Mm-hmm. So the husband got a bit concerned, and he started to approach, and the wife was trying to call him back. But when he got to about 15 feet from this big log, this creature, is what he said, stood up. When it stood up, mm-hmm. it was about 8 foot tall. It has a chimpanzee face and a very, he said it wasn't your usual massive big Bigfoot, but it was slenderish.
It was a woodwish.
Yeah, it was a woodwoose. And mm-hmm. what he said he found very strange was it was holding a big stick in its hand.
Oh.
And which was very strange. And at that, there was a couple of seconds of them looking at one another. The wife again called the husband back, and I think he was now stuck to the spot with fear.
Yeah.
The creature, the woman then reported, it's written that it took off at a speed that was unbelievable. She said it took off and it couldn't be matched by anybody, like it knew the forest inside out, and it was silent. She said it took off, the speed it went, and it was silent. So that's one of the famous ones from Ballybooley Forest in County Antrim.
That's amazing. And I'm mostly impressed by stories like that, because if you think about it, I mean, this is probably 500 pounds of muscle on eight feet of body, and, huge feet, probably on the terrain is not carpet, so you know it's going to make noise, and yet they can navigate that in absolute stealth, in absolute silence. And that, to me, is just nothing short of amazing.
Yeah, that's exactly what she said. She said she didn't know how it didn't make a sound. It was able to skip and jump and hop between the cut down the tree stumps and the logs or whatever was there with ease, she said, and it disappeared. So that was very strange.
By disappeared, you mean that it went through cover, or that it actually faded?
No, okay. Actually, it disappeared into the brush. So it covered the ground in seconds,
Wow. Yeah. And the speed at which people report they move is just beyond reckoning. That's my most sobering thought of it, is that obviously they don't want to kill people, because they really would have no problem killing anyone indiscriminately, and there would be very little or nothing a person could do in defense of that. I mean, the way these things move, and they have very thorough awareness of their environment and know how to navigate it perfectly. I had a guest on the show a while ago, not too long ago, but his name is Stephen Major, and he's part of an organization over here that researches Bigfoot. And he said they were out doing an investigation, and he was up on a hillside in a real thick brush with he had an opening into this field that he was monitoring, looking for a potential Bigfoot coming through. And he said he was sitting there in absolute silence and just sitting down with his back up to a tree. And he's looking down and listening and watching. And the next thing he knows, there is something breathing in his ear and touches him on the shoulder. And but just the idea that you're sitting there in absolute darkness, absolute silence, and still this thing could come up on a forest floor through all of that debris and stuff, and still, be right in his ear. Oh yeah. He said it was just unbelievable. And this is definitely a creature that is absolutely perfectly adapted to its environment.
Yes, it's one of the things that I've heard a few times from people, and it does make a lot of sense, mm-hmm. that if you put us into the equation, like yourself, Brent, if you're sitting in your house and You're sitting in your living room watching television, and a burglar breaks into your house.
Yeah.
Us guys who are out researching in the woods are like a burglar, right?
Right.
So this burglar comes into your house, right, and you're sitting watching your television, and you know that your door's been penetrated or your window's been smashed or whatever. Right.
Yep.
So this burglar has to come in, and he has to find where you are, and he has to find where your money is and all these different things. But you're like the Squatch. Brent is the Squatch. Brent knows his living room. Brent knows his hallway. Brent knows his kitchen. He knows all his bedrooms. He knows his bathroom. He knows where everything is. He knows where the 9mm is in the drawer.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It's the same with Bigfoot when we go into the woods.
Right. Yeah.
He knows every tree. He knows every hole in the ground. He knows every bush. It's exactly the same as that. So really, we're the invader. He's in his home. That's why it's part of the reason why he can be so stealthy is because he knows where everything is.
Yeah, and that's a great point. I mean, you know, even in terms of, you know, the sound your house usually makes, what are normal sounds, and you know the ones that aren't, and you know what smells normal in your house and what isn't normal smell, you know. So
exactly.
Yeah, we can only guess how good their hearing is and how good their smell is. But, you know, if you look at a bear, for instance, a black bear's sense of smell, or a grizzly bear, one of the two, is supposed to be like 4 times stronger than a bloodhound, you know? And that's an amazingly strong nose. So, I'm sure they, like you say, they know long before, they know probably the moment we enter the forest, and they don't have to be anywhere near to get the signs and signals and stuff.
That's an awesome story, Grant. I must go back and listen to that show, Tap on the Shoulder, and, you know, breathing in Mr. Major's ear. That is an awesome story. Yeah.
We do have another thing, Grant, here about that you guys don't. We don't have any crickets here calling crickets. So it's when we go out at night time, it's deadly quiet. Not a sound to be heard. So the chances of sneaking up on, you know what I mean, on them sneaking up on us is, you know, without being heard is difficult enough, but they still manage to do it. So, you know.
That's amazing. No, I didn't know you didn't have crickets. Is there other type of noisy? You said it was silent, but so you don't have the insect populations that we do.
We don't have, we do have frogs, but we don't have like croaking, calling frogs like you guys have in the States where you're here and down in Louisiana and stuff like that. But no, it amazes me when I watch TV programs down there. I don't know how you guys sleep at night with the noise. It's between crickets and calling frogs. You know, I'd say it's you get used to it, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose. Course, just like everything.
Of course, we're saying about squatches being silent and stuff. There is certain times, but as many of your listeners will know, Brent, that they aren't so silent. Sometimes that is done to intimidate or whatever the case is, or just simply let you know who's there. Mm-hmm. In one instance, shortly after that instance that we had making the documentary, I was out by myself one night with a big torch with me, etc., and I could clearly hear 2 feet walk. So it was done intentionally that night to, okay, Chris, we're here. We know you're here. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's just sort of them things, you know, where either they don't want you to be there, or they'll be silent, they'll be stealthy. If they don't want you there and they want to let you know they don't want you there, they'll be noisy. So the footsteps went on for ages. And it walked up to about 20 feet from me that night. Didn't see anything, just heard it, you know, but it was clearly bipedal walking.
And the interesting thing is that, you know, you're right. We hear stories of, you know, them shadowing, and that the shadowing is done in what appears to be really thick, impossible kind of brush, but they're just going right through it. There's lots of reports of that over here that they do that, but you're right. I agree wholeheartedly that it's absolutely intentional because, you know, clearly they can move without a sound when they want to.
Yeah. I think it's whatever they feel is right at the time. You know, if they want you to know they're there, or if they don't want you to know they're there, whatever the case is, you know.
Right.
Yeah, we went out one night, Brent, and we went into this popular area, you know, which we go, we don't even really want to say where it is.
Sure.
We want to try and we'll do more research in the area. But we went in. Chris was ahead of me by about 40 or 50 yards with another chap called Anthony. Mm-hmm. I was back a bit from him, about 40 or 50 yards behind. Chris, you know, we were only there 5 minutes, and Chris let a roar into the woods, and then proceeded to turn to Anthony and was talking to him. But what he didn't hear was what I heard, was like a car crash going through the forest about 150 yards, you know, on the left-hand side.
Wow.
So whatever it was, got spooked, and I could clearly see where it was. You know, I put the flashlight on the area. I couldn't see anything. So we did the unthinkable, and we went off trail and proceeded to the area. When we got there, we were in the middle of heavy, heavy brush, and we decided to switch all torches and flashlights off.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, a couple of minutes went by, and we could hear footsteps 50 or 60 yards in front of us. We quickly turned on the flashlights, and it stopped. We decided to turn them off again. A couple of minutes later, we could hear 50 or 60 yards on our left-hand side, clearly bipedal footsteps. We put on the torches again, the flashlights again. Nothing could be seen. And then we turned them off again. And the same thing happened on our right-hand side at the same distance. So whatever it was, there was either one or multiple, but they were around us, and they were clearly bipedal steps.
And
it was heavy brush.
Wow. It sounds coordinated, though, like an intelligent intimidation.
Yes. We decided after the third time, we said we were pushing our luck, and we lit up the whole place like Christmas, you know, and it was time to back off out of there, you know, and get onto the main trail again. So that's what we did.
Wow. Now, that brings up a good point. What kind of intelligence do you guys feel that we're dealing with? Is it like a human level intelligence or close, or what do you guys think?
It's pretty close, and I think most people think that. Brent, it's just, they're just too smart to be an animal.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, they're a hominin or hominin. Mm-hmm. You know, some people obviously have different beliefs on things like Bigfoot's cloak and these different things. Other people think that they're totally flesh and blood, etc. But they're definitely a hominin of some description. And One suggestion that I did hear from a UK researcher a few years back, which made a lot of sense for all the guys out there who do believe that Bigfoot's cloak, which I don't personally believe so myself, but
sure,
for those people who do think that, this guy actually suggested, well, maybe we have both. Maybe Bigfoots are living hominids, right?
Yeah,
very, very, very close to people. Their makeup, their DNA, and all that sort of stuff, but at the same time, these guys who see Bigfoots disappear in front of them, mm-hmm. all these sort of things, maybe they have seen a ghost of a Bigfoot that died.
Oh,
and I thought that a good point, actually. You know,
that is,
if they are so close to us, Brent, and there's ghosts of humans out there, which many people believe,
mm-hmm.
But then maybe there's ghosts of Bigfoot too, because they're so close to us. Mm-hmm. Maybe these guys who have seen one disappear in front of their eyes haven't actually seen a living Bigfoot. They've seen one, a dead one.
That's an interesting point. I kind of like that, actually. I really do. And that may really dispel a lot of the mysticism around it, or at least put it in a quantifiable manner. But I mean, I do ghost stories all the time, of course, on the show, and ghost encounters and stuff. And there are so many reports, even of cats and dogs, ghosts, people experiencing. So I think that's a very strong possibility. Thank you. Thank you for that insight. That's really cool.
Yeah, I can't remember the guy who said it now, but that's just a few years ago, but I thought it really good, and it just stuck in my head from then, you know?
Yeah, right. And I've experienced plenty of ghostly things myself, so I have no problem getting my head around that, and that actually makes a lot of sense.
So, well, Jim.
Yeah, Brent, just getting on to the documentary itself. We have the runtime for the documentary is, believe it or not, is 1 hour and 55 minutes. So it's substantial. It covers a fair bit of sightings here. We recreated four or five sightings here in from record here of what we have, plus a couple of night times investigations. If anyone wants to see the trailers for it, it's available on YouTube there. And if you just simply type in Walking with the Wild Man, there's an exclusive there as well on a bit of an interview. And the trailer itself is there if anyone wishes to type that in. And just to get a little preview of what is coming out, it's coming out on the 1st of December.
Oh, cool. So that's right around the corner.
Yeah. One of those sightings that we covered in the documentary, which we can talk about, Brent, was actually in my local area. And it was one of the ones that really got me going, obviously. And it was one of those sightings that maybe you wouldn't be that fussed on having yourself. The guy was walking along, and he heard what he described as a dying animal call. So an animal in distress, an animal was basically being killed. Ooh. And this went on for a moment or two. And he headed on around the trail. And strangely enough, it was the trail that I told you about earlier, the exact same trail where I heard all the grunting and groaning back in August.
Oh.
And he just turned onto that trail, basically. By this stage, the animal dying had stopped. And he just got that feeling, like we talked about earlier too, of being watched or whatever. This was a little more than the usual being watched story. He turned around and it was standing right behind him. As in, like, one feet behind him.
Oh, no.
Chest to chest. And he looked up, you know, and it was 7 feet tall. It was a woodmouse. It was, like we described earlier, the dick between a chimpanzee and the Neanderthal sort of face. And it was built like the Hulk, of course.
Oh, man.
Or bigger than the Hulk, and it was standing right behind him. And he just backed off a little bit, obviously.
Yeah.
And he kept reversing back a little bit, and it was just standing looking at him. He reversed back a little bit more, and he was still standing looking at him. This went on a few times. He sort of turned around and he started walking away. He looked behind him and it was still there. It wasn't going to budge. And eventually he got more or less right up the trail and looked around and it was gone. But that's one of those sightings that we actually covered this sighting in the documentary. And we sort of had to do that one, you know.
Yeah.
But it even got me, and to be honest, when we were actually filming the recreation for it, we actually went out and shot the recreation of what this guy seen
in the exact spot.
Yeah, yeah. And I was sort of minding my own business, Brent. At the time, I was, you know, working at cameras and working at sound and what you do and all these sort of things. And I think I maybe even had a cigarette in my mouth and all these things, just a wee world of my own. And when I was doing all this here, Ben and Jim had been building up the Bigfoot site for the recreation.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't know this. And I turned around after I had finished what I was doing, and Jim was in the Bigfoot suit, standing right behind me. And I goes, ah! But the feeling that I got at that point, even though I knew it was Jim in the suit,
right,
the feeling that I got at that time must have been what that guy felt like at the time. And it just sort of brought it home to me, if you ever did see one that close, like even Mr. Major, who you talked about,
yeah,
with the breathing in the ear, to be that close must be, it must be something else.
It must be absolutely terrifying, because I mean, just physically, you know, we're weak. I mean, we have no defense against one of these things if they wanted to do something. And I guess we, you know, being that we don't know much about them, the curious thing is, you know, is there any legend of them preying on people in Ireland?
Not that we're aware of, no, but the sightings do go back into medieval history.
Right.
Clearly, if you do a Google search, you'll see there's all sorts of hairy men and woodmouse sightings. There's even medieval paintings that were done of the woman in the woods being there. It actually is one or two stories of women, maybe they were in the woods washing clothes in the stream and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And they were sort of half attacked or tried to be, you know, taken away by one or two. But it's all in medieval stories. It's definitely there. It's there if you Google it. You can't find it if you dig deep, you know.
Sure. Now, you guys, do you guys cast prints and stuff like that? Are you finding castable prints and other physical evidence like that?
Yeah, there has been many cases where we have found castable prints, but I'm one of these guys, Brent, who don't, I just don't bring cast.
Okay.
Caster. I just take photographs, so I've taken a lot of photographs, prints, but I suppose you really, really should do that. All my colleagues in the States all keep saying, you got to bring the plaster, But I just happen to be out and take a photograph, and that's it, you know, post it in the Bigfoot forum. There you go, guys, there's a print. That's just my sort of nature on the prints. But sure. Yeah, I really should do that, you know.
I think that the prints are not, I mean, of course, they're a size representation, but I think when you look at the way that they're pressing into the ground and you can kind of get a lot of information from the mechanics of that foot and what it's doing and how it works with that mid-tarsal hinge and such. And I think that it's, you know, it probably would help the research too as you're going. But yeah, I just would love, what size do you suppose is pretty common over there for the prints?
The biggest, they all range differently, the same as they do in North America, obviously. But the biggest one that I ever found was 21 inches.
Oh, my God. That's a monster.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez. And
obviously, the average is sort of 14 to 15 inches is the average.
Uh-huh.
I found a lot of little small ones too, a little junior, little juvenile
right.
prints.
Uh-huh.
And but that one was huge. It was 21 inches, and I says, "Oh my goodness!" You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know,
is there ever a curiosity? Is there ever how many missing people do you guys have in terms of like the missing 411 stuff that's going on over here in the States?
There's a lot of crime, like everywhere else. We do have crime as well.
Sure.
But there is one story that I found very intriguing from a place called Wicklow Mountains, which is just south of Dublin City, where there was a cyclist. He was one of these experienced mountain biking cyclists, you know, on the mountain bike with all the gear and all the top of the range bike. He was on this trail.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually found his body. His bike was mangled, and his body was smashed and pulverized. But where he was, he didn't seem to crash. There was nothing. He didn't fall from a height. Something happened to him. It's not really being talked about as much, but it's just put down to a sort of a cycle accident. But
if
you dig deep into it, how can he have such horrific injuries from a little, you know what I mean? If he did fall, it wasn't off, didn't fall from a cliff or a height. He just fell off his bike.
Oh.
That's what they say, but
sure.
His bike was badly damaged and he was...
Didn't add up to the injuries is what
you're just,
saying.
It just didn't calculate. It didn't add up to the severe, how severe the injuries were on him. So whether he came across, you know, something that he shouldn't have seen or too close to something.
Right.
And something pulverized them basically.
Wow. That's intense. Well, gentlemen, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. This has been absolutely brilliant. And I know I've learned a lot about the situation over there, much, much more than I thought I knew before. And thank you both for being here and coming on to the show.
It was an absolute pleasure.
Yeah.
And could you guys take a couple minutes and let people know how to keep in touch with what you're doing, where to find the documentary when it comes out on December 1st, et cetera?
Yeah, sure. We don't have a website as such, but we're on Facebook. The little @ Irish Bigfoot Research. You'll get our Facebook page up. People can contact us through it. They can send us a message. They can post on it. They can also join our group. Mm-hmm. Our Facebook group, which is simply called Bigfoot. Of course, we'd love to be able to hear from more witnesses, as we said. And if, of course, people have full confidentiality in their reports as well, it's all kept fully confidential. And the documentary, of course, is coming out on Vimeo On Demand on December 1st this year, which is this Sunday coming. As we said, that is one channel that we're going to hopefully use to get more witnesses to come forward. And indeed, if people in Ireland or abroad, whatever the case is, see this documentary, and it wants to make them open up about coming forward about their own sightings. Maybe they haven't told either organization here or an organization in the States. Maybe that'll help them to come forward with their story.
It's the main reason why we went and made this documentary, is to try and bring more witnesses forward. Mm-hmm. So and to try and break the link, break the chain, as you say, and try and get people talking.
Yeah,
it'll hopefully benefit us, Brent. But as I said, like I just said, hopefully it'll benefit other organisations across the world too. That'll just light that little spark, and they'll say, even if it's Pennsylvania, for example, and they type in Pennsylvania Bigfoot or whatever the case is, mm-hmm. they'll just contact this group and report their sighting. So hopefully it'll set that spark.
Yeah,
you know,
I think it will, because I think the more. And you hit it right on the head, is that I think that as more groups work together, as you guys compare notes, and of course, you guys are a pretty unique situation, as you're on a big island and your population would be, you know, encompassed there. But to see the similarities, any differences and stuff would really, as you compare notes, I'm sure we would all learn from each other a whole bunch.
Yeah, definitely.
So, well, fantastic, gentlemen. Again, Chris Dawson and Jim Bradley, thank you guys so much for being here. And ladies and gentlemen, check out Irish Bigfoot Research Organization. And what is the webpage? You said you have a webpage.
We don't have a webpage. So we have a Facebook page. It's just a little at sign at Irish Bigfoot Research.
Okay. Sorry about that. I thought you said you did.
No, that's perfect. Yeah. It's just on Facebook. The people type in at the little at sign and then Irish Bigfoot Research. They'll get us up. They can send us a message or...
Okay. Wonderful. Well, gentlemen, I hope you'll come back on again, because this has gone really fast, and I know we're just scratching the surface here. We could probably have many, many more hours of dialogue and never run out of things to discuss.
We'll certainly come back, Brad, if we've already promised you that, so we'll certainly do it, my friend.
All right.
Indeed.
It's been a rare and wonderful pleasure, and thank you, gentlemen, so much. And I just wish you all the best, and I can't wait to see the documentary myself, so I'm looking forward to it.
You're most welcome, Brent.
Thank you very much, Brent. Thank you.
All right. Special thanks again to Chris Dawson and Jim Bradley from the Irish Bigfoot Research Organization. Thank you guys for joining me. It was just a great show. I hope you all enjoyed it out there. Some really cool information and experiences from across the pond. But we hope you guys will follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/paranormalportalradio. Check us out on YouTube. We got hundreds of videos over there of Don and I doing the show. And I think we got like almost 600 shows, something crazy like that over there. So definitely check that out. And you can find it over on YouTube at youtube.com/paranormalportal. And follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/paranormalportal, P-O-R-T-L. So thank you all so much for being here. Hope you guys will continue to join us. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe to the downloads or to the podcast to get the downloads as they come. And if you enjoy the show, please head over to iTunes and leave us a good review. That goes a long way in helping other people to find the show, and hopefully they will enjoy it just as much as you do. But thank you guys so much. We love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice, take care of each other. Help each other out, find the magic in every day, and remember to laugh as much as you can. Take care, everybody. Thank you.
sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.